The Round Table. Punchy, objective, and interactive. The Hard Facts Round Table. 3.05 p.m. every weekday on 95.1 Nigeria Info. The Round Table. Punchy, objective, and interactive. The Hard Facts Round Table. 3.05 p.m. every weekday on 95.1 Nigeria Info.
Welcome to Hard Facts this afternoon. It is the sixth day in September. Thank you for being here, and I hope your day has gone or is going good so far. It is already 12 minutes past 3 p.m. Nigerian time, and it's a great time to be alive and a great time to be your host on the round table. Unfortunately, Kimberly is not back. You guys need to commit Kimberly in your prayers. She's having to go to take care of some stuff, you know, personal stuff and all of that. So let's commit her and just pray generally for ourselves and try and be in touch, you know, as much as you can on social media. Say a word of hello to her and just check up on her. So I'm sitting in. She's not going to be around until Thursday when she'll be resuming. I'll be here on Hard Facts taking care of studio business. And as we expect Kimberly back, I'm sure you guys had a fantastic time equally with Debbie on the sunny side, right? That's my hope. And as we delve into the round table this very afternoon, I want you to stick around with me. Today, by the way, is September 6th. And let's see, what is it? The days are moving very, very fast. Trust me, it's moving in an astronomical speed. And you'd be shocked that we've already spent, or today is the 249th day, and we have 160 more days to go in the year 2021. So just keep up with time and ensure that you do your time well, because time is life. Time is life. My name is Swat. Thank you so much for joining me. I have with me by the phone this afternoon as my guest analyst, Mr. Cletus Agada. Good afternoon to you, sir.
Good afternoon, Swat.
Thank you for thank you for patiently waiting on the line, you know, and thank you for always joining me whenever I call you, too. All right.
Thank you.
Without wasting much time, let us begin to look at some of the top three stories for this evening. Even as we do that, we will be hoping to take your reaction, you there, listener. Just quickly before we start off with the news this afternoon on Roundtable today, after the Roundtable, the 4 o'clock hour will see us exploring some health issues. If you guys know about sepsis, yes, sepsis is a big, big concern. And the whole month of September has been set aside to create awareness on the disease known as sepsis. Now, what is that all about? We'll be joined by a doctor at the 4 o'clock hour, and he'll be helping us wade through that matter. So for those of you who have heard about sepsis and you don't know so much about it, please stay on. We'll be taking on that at the 4 o'clock hour. 5 o'clock, we'll see us talking about electricity. I would love to know what the situation is around you. Hopefully, you know, authorities will be listening and be taking notes of problematic areas, okay? And then all the other eyewitness reports that we'll be having along the show, it ends at 7 o'clock. So come along with me. Once again, I'm Swat, but you can call me Help. Welcome, Majesty. All right, Mr. Clayton, let's start with the first story this evening as we take a look at this one that talks about Mieti Allah asked the National Assembly. This is how the cable puts it. Mieti Allah asked the National Assembly to stop governors from encouraging or enacting anti-open grazing law. This is some interesting development as the open grazing has been on. Many southern states especially are enacting that. Even some northern governors have said, well, it is something we need to look away from and find more modern ways. But let's see the bit of the detail there as I take you on your analysis. The group that's Mieti Allah Kotal Hore says that anti-open grazing law recently enacted by some states will worsen cattle rustling and undermine stability. The group called on the National Assembly to intervene, saying the law will hamper the ability of pastoralists to function effectively. According to NAN Saleh Al-Hassan, who is the National Secretary of the Association, spoke on Monday at an event held at Uke Karu Local Government of Nasarawa State. He said the anti-open grazing law would destroy livestock production, send millions of people that depend on livestock value chain into poverty, and he also appealed to the National Assembly to come to the rescue of the pastoralists by resuscitating and passing Grazing Reserves Commission Bill and other livestock management bills that were initiated by the previous assembly. He called on the federal government to create a federal ministry of livestock and fisheries as seen in many African countries. He also stressed the need for the government to take an inventory of all existing grazing reserves, transhumance corridor, major stock routes, and fully develop at least one grazing reserve in each senatorial district. This is in line with the recommendation of the Interministerial Committee on Livestock Development in Nigeria as at the year 2015, the report of the Presidential Committee on Pastoralists and Insecurity 2014, and National Livestock Transformation Program, he said. He also said the review of the Land Use Act was long overdue to accommodate the interests of all land resources users, including pastoralists. Well, Mr. Clayton Sagada, we can go on and on, but this is a call of the group near to Allah Kautal Horori saying that we need to stop with the anti-open grazing law and look at ways that we can make it all-encompassing to include pastoralists. And, of course, you heard the reasons he mentioned that.
I don't know what's all-encompassing about what he is saying. They just refuse to learn, or they refuse to improve on themselves, and I think that's just the challenge. The issue is it's asking the National Assembly to intervene. I don't know how they want to do that. The state, Nigeria, is just moving on. If you fail to sign the a ban on open grazing as being done in some southern states, you might fall victim to what is now happening in Katsina, in Jigawa, and other northern states, where even movement completely by vehicle of livestock has been banned completely, and I think it's quite unfortunate. I really feel sad when I hear Mitiala talking about this all the time, when they don't even talk about the criminality and all the crime that's been perpetrated by herders and people who pretend to be herders, living amongst these cattle rearers and commit all manner of crime. We hear of kidnapping, we hear of banditry and all of that. These are people who have lived in the desert for a very long time and who are supposed to be herders, and they just suddenly wake up overnight and become kidnappers on the highway and all of that. They've made the northern parts of Nigeria very ungovernable, uninhabitable for people, and it's unfortunate that they are thinking in this direction. I don't expect the National Assembly to take their advice, and even if they do, it's beyond their power to do that, because as he said, the review of the Land Use Act is long overdue, as he said, but of course, I don't think the review is going to remove the power of the lands, or the power vested in our governors and then handing over to the state, to the president, most especially when you will need to third houses of assembly or state assemblies to sign any amendment to the constitution to that effect. I don't think they are going to get it. I don't think that will be done very soon. You recall the last time we were on this program, we talked about the efforts of Mr. President to take over the only power, the constitution vested in our governors, that is not a federal power, and that is the power of the Land Use Act. The president continued to talk and fight the efforts of the governors to make sure that there is orderliness in livestock farming in Nigeria, and I think that is what the ban on open grazing is all about. They are trying to bring some level of orderliness, some level of decency and all of that into this very important part of our national life, and it's unfortunate that the Maitiala people are not ready to pick any lessons from the improvement, because it seems as if the train is leaving them behind. It's quite unfortunate, because by the time ranching or ban on open grazing come into full effect, you will discover that cattle rearing is not even actually a Fulani business, because an Igbo man may want to rear cattle, a Yoruba man may want to rear cattle, every other person might want to rear cattle, because The only difference between what we have now and what might be obtainable then is that the way the Fulani suffers, sleep in the desert, they deprive themselves of a good living, their children cannot go to school and all of that. I don't think others want to subject themselves to that condition because they want to be rich or because they want to have money. Because yeah, you cannot say you have money when you cannot do what money can do. So, and these people have money, they have millions of naira, they are millionaires, and then their children cannot go to school. They are millionaires, they don't live in good houses. They are millionaires, they sleep on the floor. They don't have access to the basic things of life. No electricity, no good houses, no water to drink. Those are the challenges that open grazing, as these people are encouraging, comes with. And it seems as if they don't want good life. That is just the truth. Maybe Allah is saying they don't want good life for their people. They don't want their children to go to school, and they are about wasting another generation, because postponing this is wasting another generation. I feel like crying when I see children who should be in the classroom following curfew up and down on the street of even the federal capital of Nigeria, and government personalities, policy makers, non-governmental organizations, even the international community, see these children on the federal highway, on airport road, and you know,
this
way into the city. We see the children of 5 years, 6 years, following curfew when they are supposed to be in classroom.
Let me ask you this please, right? As much as we keep seeing governors or government at different levels come up with this anti-grazing laws and all of that, you also wonder what that same government is doing to give an alternative to these people who are insisting that, look, we want this. Because all their lives from generation to generation has been passed down to them, and you might want to give the excuse that this is the only thing they know how to do. Now, what is government doing to say that we will stop this? It's just like an addiction. You can't stop it abruptly, because somehow there's going to be a relapse. You know, so what are we seeing government doing, or what should government do on the alternative to make these people realize that this is not the world best practice in the times we live in, and that rather we need to go down this way as an alternative to this, so that they do not feel that they are losing out? Because I think I understand the reason why they are fighting so hard, because this is the only thing they seem to know. Do you get what I'm saying, right?
The issue is because they are fighting, and then they are having government backing. You and I probably were in this city when El-Rufai was demolishing shops, demolishing shanty markets and all of that. Earlier this morning, I went to Apo to go and buy a shock absorber, and I discovered that the people that sell those parts are in a good warehouse or a store somewhere. They kept those, even though they had a makeshift shop by the roadside, and they took me somewhere to go and bring those shock absorbers out for me. That was not what we used to have in those days. And nobody taught them how to do those things. El-Rufai just woke up one day, about 2005, 2006, destroyed their shop, or where you used to call Apo Nepa now. That was where the paper market was in those days. And then gave them another land, built this place and all of that. Some people sold those lands, used the money, moved back to their villages or do something else. It was strictly their business. When the federal government decided to take over Gwari land, built resettlements for them, some of them sold it to Igbo men, sold it to other tribes that had money, and then decided to move further to the bush. Of course, that was their business. It wasn't the government that is to tell them, and then those that are now beginning to educate their children, they are beginning to live good life. So if the government decides to say, no, you cannot practice open grazing, it is the responsibility of these people. I'm sure there are entrepreneurs that want to lecture them. There are agriculturalists, people that went to the university, that studied these things, that want to make a living out of it also, that will teach them this is how this thing works. We see a lot of people every year on social media now teaching you how to do snail farming, grasshopper farming, and all of that. So when they are ready to embrace this, there are people who will be there to help them, because they even have money to pay for it. It's the will. They don't have the will. And then the government of the day is not also helping matters. Because by the time you impose, change is a very difficult thing. This is change. We are talking about change now. If you bring in change to them, you should know that they are going to resist it. But in resisting it, you have to look at which one is better for the society, which one is better for them that are even resisting it. I think today, looking back at what LFI was doing about 15, 16 years ago, everybody will tell you that, hey, if you have not done those things, the whole of Abuja would have been a ghetto by now. It was very painful decision, but they were the right decisions. So some of the things that we hear the governor saying today, yes, as painful as they are, we definitely have to embrace those things if we want a better future for the children that are roaming the street today. The opportunities are there. You don't even need the government. Even in Abuja here, where they tell you land is this, land is that, yesterday, people bought plenty lands and converted it into estates. Yeah, nobody is talking about the master plan. You go to development control, they are going to find a way to accommodate those things so long as you meet some standards. So if you go to Nasarawa State, if you go to Benue State, if you go and buy a large plot of land, go and do C of O, and you say you want to do ranching, nobody is going to come there and take the land from you. It's only when you present your C of O, you want to do ranching, and the governor say, no, you can't do that, then we can now begin to talk that how, what right does the governor to stop you from doing that? The governor doesn't own the land. If somebody accommodates you, these Fulani people have gone to different villages in the south, in the east, in the middle belt, and they have acquired land. And people have obliged them and given them land. So if they are ready, I think the room is there. And it is not the responsibility of government to go and start opening businesses for them. No, I don't think so. So government can help. Government can train them, give them better orientation. But it shouldn't be the responsibility of government.
Okay, indeed. All right, let's move on to other matters. Even though, let me just quickly take your, you know, let me pick your brain on that move on the side of the government. The NCC has ordered that all telcos stations in Zamfara just, you know, shut down for another 2 weeks. Earlier than that, we also heard that the roads were blocked in order to fight against insecurity. How do you think that is going to work out?
Well,
for Zamfara and Katsina State,
they've not really told us what they want to achieve. I don't really know. I think it would have even been better if the telephone lines are opening. If they told, I know, I recall the last time they're talking about them budgeting billions of naira for tracking and all of that. I don't know what happened to those things. I don't know if they are still waiting for the money before they start tracking. Because if people are making calls and you can intercept their calls, I think it's better when you can get call logs and all of that from the communications. Telecommunications service provider, it would have been better. But if they are shutting down, I don't know what they want to achieve. I don't know, really know. I just can't explain it. So, but again, these are the things we're talking about, because even the people in the bandits or terrorists or whatever you call them, they don't even care. You shutting down telephone services, they don't care. They live in the bush. In most cases, the places they sit don't even have network. So they are punishing the people that live within that area. They are stopping them from calling for help. And then probably they are trying to shut them out of the outside world, because a lot of atrocities are being committed in this place, and people are dying every day. People are being kidnapped. Even people in government, people in high places are victims of these things. And of course, everybody is just tired of the whole thing that is happening every day. There's no day you go on and check out the news and you will see some one horrible news or the other coming out from Katsina, Zamfara, Jigawa, even Kaduna here. It's really sad, really, really sad.
Okay, indeed, it's a very sad situation. Let's move on to this next story. This one talks about, so 1 month after BDC operators are groaning under the CBN Forex policy. Remember the recent Forex policy of the CBN, as it has to do directly with the security exchange operators. Now, this is the detail, or just part of the details, 1 month after the Central Bank of Nigeria announced the discontinuation of foreign exchange allocation for bureau de change firms, operators and traders in the parallel market to have bemoaned the implication of the policy on their business and livelihood. Now, the Daily Trust is the paper that reports this, and they said that this is some of the parallel markets in Abuja, Kano, and Lagos, and report a bleak atmosphere as traders loiter about due to the drop in the volume of transactions in the market. The president of the Association of Bureau de Change Operators of Nigeria, APCON, Aminu Gwadebe, actually spoke up and said that the decision to discontinue forex sales to the BDC operators by the CBN has led to the loss of over 40,000 jobs in the economy. And the CBN decided to discontinue the supply of foreign exchange to bureau de change operators in its attempt to clamp down on illegal activities allegedly being perpetrated by some BDC operators. CBN Governor Godwin Emefiele, while announcing the ban, said that there was evidence of prevailing ownership of several BDCs by some promoters to procure multiple forex from the central bank. The Apex Bank was allocating $20,000 weekly to each BDC operator in the country. With 5,500 BDC operators in the country, the figure translated to an annual allocation of $5.72 billion to the parallel side of the foreign exchange market. Now, speaking in a post-mortem of the CBN action, Wadebe said that the impact of the CBN action include direct job losses of about 40,000 employees and over 200 billion naira capital to go toxic. Listing further implications of the policy, Wadebe said the decision paved the way for dominance of unofficial online and hawala activities, dearth of BDC's expertise developed over the years, increased volatility and confidence crisis of the Naira, security concerns and increase in prices of goods and services. And then he goes on to say that in all the BDCs remain the potent tool for CBN exchange rate stability instrument and accessibility. So, what do you say about that? Many hail the decision on the side of the CBN. Some also try to look at it from the disadvantage point of view. But then these are some of the implications, as has been mentioned by the President Association of Bureau Exchange Operators in Nigeria. Do you have anything to say about that policy?
Yeah, I think one other thing they didn't add is that since the CBN took that decision, the Naira has lost about 100 Naira or so. And so I think that is also very important to you. Every day now you come and you see different figures in the market. I don't know what the CBN is trying to achieve by denying Bureau de Change Operators the dollar. If you go to the banking hall, you definitely not get dollar to buy. It's like Nigerian banks are not used to selling dollars, or it's not part of their calling, or it's not part of their license. I don't know. The CBN has not been able to regularize that before they took this decision that the Bureau de Change, where everyone go and get dollar, will no longer be given dollar. In any case, they were the one that licensed the Bureau de Change, because usually Bureau de Change operators have licenses from the CBN, that is the official ones. And then they have deposit with the CBN and all of that. Then the CBN woke up overnight and say, hey, we are not going to give them dollars again. Those are the things we witnessed in the early days of the Buhari regime, the panic policies that made the Naira, that weakened the Naira so much, and then it became difficult for it to recover, and every day it continued to lose value against the dollar or other international currencies in the market.
Do you think the further losing of value of the Naira has to do with this? Is it a direct implication of this policy? Do you think so?
Yeah, I think the CBN is trying to run away from their responsibility, because what is happening actually is that they don't have dollars to give anybody. Mm-hmm. And people need dollars. People want their children to pay their children's school fee outside this country. I recall, sometime last year or something, there is a limit on how much you can pay on international transaction you can do on on the Naira ATM. And so one of my friends that had to pay his sister's school fee outside this country, we had to gather like 30 ATMs, and all of us had to use 100, because I think $100 was the limit. And then he had to transfer the money to us. So we all started looking for how to cut corners. That's just, because it's something that I've done also. Mm. And so people need this thing. The dollars are not available. People want to pay their children's school fee. They sell oil. We don't know where this thing is supposed to come back in dollar, and then we're supposed to have some dollars to boost the local economy. And people that have things, people that import cars and other things into the country, can be able to have hard currencies to do their businesses. We are an import-dependent economy. A lot of Nigerians need their foreign currencies to be able to do transactions. Mm. We call at a point, the Buhari administration told us that we cannot be trading with the Chinese yen now or whatever the currency is. We've not seen the impact of that on the dollar, on the Naira, because everybody is still going for the dollar, pound sterling, or you. And so those are the challenges. If the CBN doesn't have enough money, enough dollar in their account to make funds, international trade, and other transactions, instead of them to come clean and tell us this is the reality, they keep hiding and then running from pillar to post and making decisions that really hurt the economy. Mm-hmm. I think this is hurting the economy. The Bureau de Change Operators, they are losing businesses. poverty, and then the people that really need this dollar to do international transactions are not getting it. People are becoming desperate. You can see somebody that is with Naira and tell you at whatever rate they want to get the dollar.
Exactly.
People in the banking halls are doing sharp businesses because the process of obtaining dollar from the banks has never been transparent before. It's supposed to be a cable at the bank so that we know if there is a deficit, if we have a legitimate reason to acquire the dollar or do an international transaction, the bank should be able to do it for you. And if there is a deficit, it should be transferred to the CBN. So if I have to pay my child school fee abroad, I should be able to go to my bank pays, and they have to transfer it to the CBN.
But if you look at the exchange rate, if you look at the exchange rates of the banks and the parallel market, many people would rather prefer to go through the black market or parallel market to get it, because there is a much difference, you know. I mean, I remember before there was this policy turnaround that when you receive dollars, you'd have to, you can now, you know, right now you can just go and cash the dollar from the counter, unlike before that it would be converted for you.
Money transfer.
Yes, money transfers and all of that. But then, I mean, the exchange rate. So I don't know if it's actually correct to say that people could go to their bank, because the exchange rate at the black market, I mean, Nigeria is still much more comfortable with that because it's higher.
You who are looking at the dollar coming in, has been changed to Naira.
Yeah.
That is where the problem is. The reason why people take their dollar to the bureau to
change the change.
The bureau to change people will even be happy for you to bring the dollar because they are looking for the dollar.
Mm.
But this is the criminality or the fraud in the whole thing. If they send you dollar, they will, if you go to the bank, they will tell you it's for whatever that is the rate.
Yeah.
That is how much they are going to give you. But if you have Naira and you want dollar from them, that is where the problem comes in.
Yeah.
They will give you the dollar.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that is where the problem is. The problem is not, and what the CBN is dodging is because the dollar coming in, the demand is higher than the supply. So the amount of dollar that comes in is less than the amount of dollar that Nigerians demand to do international trade or other transaction outside. That's what they are running for.
Mm.
So if they send you dollar today and you want to go and cash it and then take it to the road chain, of course, the bureau de change operator will be happy about that. The banks might not be happy, but of course, they don't have an option. But we have a peculiar problem. The amount at the parallel market and what is obtainable at the official market is not the same. There is nowhere you go with Naira and you want to buy dollar, and they are going to give you at the rate that the banks or the CBN say is the official rate.
Yeah.
And that is where the problem is. If you are a contractor and you need to, you get your contract and you need to bring in something outside this country to be able to execute that contract, where do you get the dollar from? It's not available. The amount, the benchmark the National Assembly used for them to award you that contract is probably around 400 and something to a dollar. And then you don't buy anything. You don't get dollar that amount of money to do any other transaction. And it is even worse when the federal government collects dollars for oil royalties and all of that, and they need the official benchmark, which dollar is not available, to share the federation account allocation money. Because when they gather for the FARC meeting, if they have sold $1 billion oil, or what $1 billion or $500 million is what they can obtain from oil for that month, the CBN or the Ministry of Finance will bring out the Naira equivalent of 400 and something, which they say is the official rate. Yes, dollar is not available anywhere like that. So even if the NNPC and the CBN want to do it well, by the time they sell oil, revenues end or income tax and all of that generated in dollars should be shared to the state and the local government in dollars, so that you don't deprive them of what they are supposed to earn, telling them that dollar is 420 naira when the dollar is not available in here for 420. So those are the challenges. Of course, you know there is a big problem in the system, and then the people that manages the economy under this Buhari administration started it from the very day, first day, when they said we are floating the dollar. I remember we used to see graphic works of people putting baskets on top of river and they floating, and that was the dollar. Those were the things we used to see those days. So now they have returned back to the same thing, putting out the bureau de change out of the market. And they play a very major role, and you can begin to see the effect on the Naira. We now return to the era of round tripping.
Exactly.
Round tripping is because there are few individuals that have access to this dollar. People are even still spending in dollars in this country because if you the naira has gone so light, how do you carry 1 million naira in your pocket going somewhere and then 1 million naira cannot buy anything for you? So people go about with dollars now, all of that, and then the people who don't have access to this dollar resort to all manner of things on how to get it. People, cashiers, ordinary or account managers in the banks are now becoming the new medical doctor, assistant god that controls everything, the whole life and death in their hands.
Yeah.
So you have to book them, beg them, and do everything for them to cut corner and then bribe them for them, your business to be successful, or your business fails. And that is why business are failing. That's why people are running now.
Okay.
MTN will do transaction in Nigeria. They tell you they can't even repatriate their cash.
Okay, well, we can go on and about this. It's quite disheartening to see, you know, for me, that's my major concern. When are we, you remember when this administration came up on board, at some point in time, it was slipping down to 500 before it came back, and it sort of stabilized at that 300. But with the way it's going now, I'm just really hopeful and optimistic that it will still come back to a level whereby, I mean, the value of the naira, of course, should be restored and rested with that currency.
I don't think the value will come down naturally. Probably by the time we stabilize things and we have a focus, we can do what we call denomination. Probably
I hope that is also possible. The first attempt was highly resisted by some powers that be as at then. I don't know if it is something that we're even willing to think about right now.
Yeah, but the current situation of things, naira will not come down naturally unless we do
denomination.
That's the point that we have to accept it. It was resisted then because there were some interest. Soludo needed a second term in office, and people saw it as he was bringing out that idea as a bit, even as lucky as the idea was then. So there were a lot of political permutations and calculations here and there, and they not felt it was their turn to bring on the CBN governor and all of that. All of that worked against the plan of Soludo. But it was good we didn't do it then, because if we had done it then, the current regime has already bastardized what would have done there. So it's better we wait for a better time when things are normal, and then we can talk of denomination.
All right. Okay, very quickly now, let's just look at this story, this last one, very, very quickly. We're running out of time, so, and we'd have to bring in the listener. The Minister of Labor and Employment, Angige, is, you know, saying that federal government is going to recover millions of naira wrongly paid to 588 doctors. The federal government says it is planning to recover millions of naira wrongly paid to 588 medical doctors across the country. While fielding questions from State House correspondents, the Minister of Labor and Employment said the affected doctors wrongly benefited from medical residency training fund meant for a particular category of doctors. The minister said the names of the doctors were uncovered after a scrutinization of the 8,000 names submitted by chief medical directors of federal government health institution for the training program. The minister said a substantial amount of the money has been refunded by some of the affected doctors, while efforts have been intensified to recover the remaining balance. He said the delay in making the refund by the affected doctors is holding back the residency fund payment by the government. And of course, we know that this is one of the reasons that the resident doctors are on strike. We have about, I think, 14 more days before NMA embark on this. And yesterday, Johesu also had given a 15-day ultimatum. So, putting all of this together very quickly so that we can take colors.
Well, I don't know. Every body under this government is a revenue-generating agency or a money-recovering this, money-recovering that. He's glad to see that Ngige doesn't want to be left out. He's someone that loves the show, and so he's down there. He wants to recover more funds. We wish him the best of luck, but you shouldn't forget that the hospitals are shut down. Patients are dying, and there is nobody to attend to them. I don't know how much is 500-something billion that they want to recover from doctor. If he knows how he wants to recover, if he knows how the money got to their hands illegally or whatever, thank God he's not saying he committed any criminal offense. We have, in the Western world, we have a scholarship scheme, we have a loan scheme that people can apply so that money doesn't stop you from going to school, and we don't have those kind of systems in Nigeria. If they have a working system that people can take loan, go and do residency and all of that, I think it will be better. They are not putting up anything. That is just my challenge with them. Mm. There was a day they said that Nigerians subsidized a lot of these medical doctors who are trying to leave the country and all of that. And I agree with them. Nigerians spend a lot to train our own in the university. Most of our federal universities are very, very subsidized. And that doesn't mean that by the time you graduate from the university, you should become a slave to the government.
Mm.
Those who went to school, if there is a system that one can take loan, go and study medicine, study engineering, and by the time you come out of school, you can continue to pay while you work, that will be fine. But of course, you should be paid while you are working, so that you'll be able to pay your debts from those things. Those are the things that we should be able to mesh together. They came into this place from, how do you call it, an angle of someone who did very well as a short-term governor in Anambra State and all of that, and then he has become the poster boy of everything that has gone wrong with this administration. It's right or quite unfortunate that he's fighting doctors here and there instead of using appeasing words that can come to him, because you know, the demands of the doctors are also very high, and it's not possible for government to meet all of them, but they must be able to show them some respect. Talk to them in languages that they can understand, so that everybody can come to the round table in the interest of the masses. It's not every time you try to claim rights. The other day, say he has agreed with them on what to do, but again, no work, no pay. That rule has never worked in Nigeria before, and I know this time with the doctors, it will still never work. He can come up with something else tomorrow, apart from the debt recovery or illegal money recovery and all of that. We know he will always want to say something. But the most important thing is for him to find a way. He's the Minister of Labor, and he should make sure that our doctors and hospitals are open so that in case of emergency, people can go to the hospital and be attended to adequately.
Indeed, very, very important.